I want to begin by welcoming everybody to today's session, Give Me 5 Training 212, GSA Schedules Part 2. Thank you for joining us. I am Michael Fravel, Program and Education Coordinator for Women Impacting Public Policy. As a quick overview, Women Impacting Public Policy is the voice for women in business in our nation's capital, advocating for and on behalf of women and minorities in business and the legislative processes of our nation. And we also have 31 instant impact teams throughout the country that you can engage with on the local level. Women Impacting Public Policy and American Express Open launched Give Me 5 to help women business owners win government contracts. We provide resources and information, including a full range of webinar training sessions like this one, designed to help navigate the federal procurement process. I have Courtney on the line with us today, and I'm really happy to be able to introduce her. But before we begin, I have just a few housekeeping items. We are recording this presentation, including the question and answer segment, and we'll make the podcast and the training materials available through the Give Me 5 website. Please do not put your phone on hold. If you need to step away, please hang up and call back. We like to keep these sessions interactive, but for audio quality, all participant lines will be muted for the presentation. During the presentation, if you have any questions for our instructor, please feel free to send your question immediately via the chat function on the right side of the webinar, or you can ask your question during the question and answer section at the end of the training. To be heard, you can toggle the mute function on your line on and off by pushing star. Lastly, your feedback is very important to us. Please take a moment to share your thoughts on the Give Me 5 feedback survey that will be in your inbox along with an attached PDF and podcast of this presentation shortly after the training. And now, on to today's program. I'm going to go ahead and put the lines on, so it'll just be a momentary pause. Okay, so today's training will provide a detailed guide to how to manage the ordering process, how to maintain your schedule and keep compliant, and also some of the online tools like GSA Advantage and eBuy, and state, local, and disaster recovery spending. Courtney's going to cover all of that today. I'm very pleased to introduce Courtney Fairchild. Courtney is the co-founder and president of Global Services. Over the past 14 years, she and her team have successfully prepared, negotiated, and managed over 650 GSA schedule contracts for Global Services clients. She's an authority on all GSA schedules within the Multiple Award Schedule program and has spoken on related topics across the country. We're thrilled to have Courtney share her expertise with Give Me 5 for this second GSA Schedules program. On to you.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. Okay, so we had started a GSA Schedule 101, or the first level, and this is meant to be a part two for those that want a little more in-depth on some of the topics surrounding GSA schedules, probably the most important of which is sales and how to actually close business using your schedule, especially for services companies. So I'm going to start today talking a little bit about how to position yourself to win GSA schedule work once you've gone through the process of actually getting on the schedule. Okay, so GSA instructs, and this is what we covered in the first of our sessions, but GSA instructs ordering agencies to prepare an RFQ, transmit that RFQ, and to make a best value determination award. Sounds pretty simple. What we're doing here is breaking out the ordering process into 10 steps that you can follow so you have a better understanding of how to try to control the process wherever possible. The most important thing to note on this particular slide where you see the 10 steps is that there are three people in this equation. You, the contractor, the customer end user, and the customer contracting office. And you need to remember that there's always two people usually in the equation in order to successfully manage the ordering process. It's not enough to just have a relationship with the contracting officer, and it's not enough to just have a relationship with the end user. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why in just a little bit. I have broken out the steps as GSA defines them. Step number one for GSA is prepare the RFQ. That's going to be four steps for us as we talk about it. We are talking about services right now, so the ordering agency, when they have a problem that you need to help them with, essentially has to develop a performance-based statement of work, which is how they're directed. You can see the things that need to be included in that performance-based statement of work, where the work is going to be performed, what kind of work is going to be performed, what the period of performance is, delivery schedule, any applicable standards or special requirements, which is a really important piece here. The ordering agency, likely, if you have the expertise, is not going to know how to write this statement of work correctly. You probably do, as you understand what your total solution is. So what we suggest is that you, quote-unquote, help them write the performance-based statement of work. Technically, you're not allowed to write that, but you can provide other examples or white papers from your past so that you actually can guide in having this written up. Once those evaluation factors and other selection criteria are included within the statement of work, you'll be the most likely to win that piece of work if you've included all the things that are going to make you stand out against your competitors. You've got to make sure that that performance-based statement of work as an ordering agency has the evaluation factors, the selection procedures, and eventually put together the entire request for quote on a GSA schedule. If it's a normal buy, they need to go out to three different GSA schedule holders for bid. So you're hoping to have driven this process to the point where you have included the criteria that will make you the natural winner when it comes time to bid that piece of work. Those are steps one through four. One of the things in terms of transmitting the RFQ, which is what the contracting officer has to do, you will find that many times the contracting officer may ask you, the contractor, who should I send this to? I know I need to get two other bids. Are you familiar with your competitors? Who's on the schedule? And how is it that I should do that? So you can direct the contracting officer to go to the Schedules e-library, or you can do it yourself, and I'm suggesting here that you're going to do this yourself. This link, gsaelibrary.gsa.gov, which you see on the top of this slide, is possibly the most powerful research tool you'll have when it comes to GSA schedules and doing research. On this website, you can actually look up every single contractor that's been awarded a GSA schedule. You find out their contact information, but you'll even see their price list. Price lists have to be posted on GSA Advantage, which we're going to cover, in order for your GSA schedule award. So everybody's ceiling pricing is public information, and you can use this to your advantage. You can look up every single contractor that you need, either by keyword, by special item number on a GSA schedule, by company name, however it is that you want to search that. My point here is if a contracting officer is asking you to help identify which contractors are comparable and which to send this bid to, you can take it even a step further. If you go to this website, you can prepare something like this that I have up on the screen, the sample price comparison, where your company's on the left and two comparable companies are in the other spaces. What you'll notice about GSA schedule purchases is they're a little bit more difficult insofar as not everyone has the same labor categories on their schedule. So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. You've got to actually look through their labor category descriptions, look at the minimum equivalencies, education and experience, and map this. This is obviously something that the contracting officer can do, but anything that you can do to help a contracting officer through the process of helping you make that award, obviously, it's going to work to your advantage. Secondly, and probably this goes without saying, but you want to pick companies that have higher rates. I mean, this example works because it makes you look better. In the end, you're bidding on an RFQ that's a performance-based statement of work and will likely be a firm fixed price deal in many cases. And so this is actually a moot point, but it helps document the file and it makes contracting officers feel more comfortable. If you can provide pieces of information like this to them and help them feel comfortable with making the purchase from you, you'll likely have repeat business as well. One of the other things that a contracting officer might ask you is, can they sole source using a GSA schedule? Technically, the answer to that question is contractually, no, you can't sole source. However, you can use a GSA schedule to make a best value determination, and if you're the only one that has that actually has the ability to provide that service, then the best value determination can be made quite easily using your schedule. Again, I've pulled up a sample here on this slide so that you can see, instead of just answering the question, yes, you can sole source, why don't I give you an example of another sole source justification that was written for us by another ordering agency, so you can take a look at the kinds of things that were previously used as the justification, again, making it easier for the contracting officer to get through the process of actually hiring you. There's any number of reasons that you can make a sole source justification. It could be timing. It could be business size. There's a whole number of ways that you can make a best value determination, and that's going to be at the discretion of the contracting officer. So as much information as you can provide will be helpful. When transmitting the RFQ, there's one other tricky part to this. As I had mentioned previously, you may be talking to your customer end user and not the contracting officer. If this goes to this point where the RFQ is about to be released and the contracting officer decides that they want to make it a small business reservation or some sort of small disadvantaged business set aside, whatever it is that they want to do, they can flip that at the last minute. So you want to do two things. Use your certifications to your advantage so that you're working with the contracting officer in order to make those small business reservations, certifications that you actually hold, because it will limit the competition in some ways, but it will allow you not to get locked out of the procurement as well. It's not uncommon for large businesses to go through everything that we just talked about when working with an ordering agency to have the contracting officer come back and say to the end user, okay, that's great, and we'll use this performance-based statement of work, et cetera, but we haven't met our women on small business goals, so we're going to actually set this aside for women-owned businesses. And so you just want to make sure that you can be a part of whatever that decision was. Once the RFQ has been issued, if you help write that statement of work, you should be in a really good position to submit a fast response in answer to that RFQ. The quote can be anywhere from 4 days, 2 days even. It can be very fast turnaround as long as they get back other, the contracting office gets back other quotes as well to fulfill their obligation. But we've seen them go out anywhere from 2-4 a week is not uncommon at all. So you want to make sure that you have the resources in place to put that together. The ordering agency, in the end, when evaluating GSA schedule RFQs, is making a best value determination. They don't have to make a best price determination. So there can be anything that is a part of your proposal or your quote that makes you the best value in terms of how you write it outside of price can also help, which is not to say that ordering agencies don't prefer lower price bids. So obviously there's going to be cost coming into play, but the fact that you're allowed to make a best value determination, it's one of the very few contracting vehicles out there that allows for that. And eventually the order can be issued directly to you. So from start to finish, that's basically, in terms of services, how the ordering agencies have to go through the process and how you can possibly handhold the contracting officers and ordering agency end users' hand in order to increase your chances of winning business. From another topic, in terms of sort of a level two class, is what do you do now that you have a GSA schedule? What's needed on an ongoing basis to keep this thing going so that you can continue to close work. The most important thing from GSA's standpoint is the industrial funding fee, or the IFF. You've got to report your sales on a quarterly basis and remit to GSA 0.75% of your total sales. You've got to make that payment within 30 days of the end of the calendar quarter. If the month has 31 days in it and you pay on the 31st day, you will be assessed as late, and you'll have a mark against you on your report card that GSA comes out with as they come in to, quote-unquote, audit you twice a contract period, so twice in 5 years. The reporting of that industrial funding fee has to be in accordance with your standard accounting procedure. So if you're a cash basis firm, that's how you report the industrial funding fee accrual, et cetera. You just have to follow what you normally do. You have to actually track your GSA sales by special item number. So the GSA schedules have the subcategories, which most people would call CLINs. GSA calls them SINs, special item numbers. You have to report your sales by special item number. So somewhere in your accounting system, you need to designate a field so that you can run an easy report at the end of the quarter, as opposed to having to go through manually and try and find those sales so that you make sure that it's accurate. GSA is going to want you to have a written procedure in place in order to make that happen. Additions, deletions of product or services, we're talking about all types of GSA schedules now. There's over 40. Additions of labor categories or product will be based on whatever the original basis of award is. So as you move forward, if you've agreed to X percent off your commercial price list for a product, that's the same kind of justification they're going to want to add another product as your price list changes, or labor categories over time. One of the things that frustrates people about schedules is that they're past performance based. So you can't add a labor category until you've actually billed for it. So over time, especially as a small business, as you grow, you will have additional capabilities that you want to continually add to your schedule as your past performance allows. Deletions can be done at any time for labor categories or product by simply submitting a modification for deletion. What you can't do is delete a product or a service and then try to add it back on at a higher price. So you can't decide that you're not okay with your pricing, so you take off your program manager and then try to add it back on for $50 higher the next day. Price adjustments. It's a hot topic as of late. There are three ways to do what are called economic price adjustments, or EPAs, on GSA schedule. You have to hold your prices for the first 12 months from award. Thereafter, you're allowed to go in up to three times, even though GSA really only wants to see you come in once every 12 months, for a maximum of 4 to 10% of an escalation. And those escalations differ by kinds of GSA schedule. The IT and engineering schedules are 10%. The mission-oriented business improvement services is 4%. So they vary by schedule. There are three different ways that you can actually raise your prices. If you based your offer on a commercial price list, be it product or service, then your basis moving forward is going to be the new price list that comes out. As your prices actually increase, you'll submit a new commercial price list along with invoices to substantiate the new prices. You can't just submit a commercial price list and hope that they're going to take that at face value. You will have to have invoices to substantiate the fact that those prices have increased to that level. The second way to do it, if you built your commercial, or you built your GSA schedule around what they call market pricing or most favored customer pricing, you can do one of two things. One is to preset a pre-negotiated escalation factor. So GSA is usually looking for no more than 3%, 3.5% as a set escalation. Right now they're really backing off of that, and they're pushing contractors to choose a market price indicator, which is the third way to do this. That is for GSA, the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, called the DOL-ECI, Employment Cost Index Table. They'll point you to a particular index that they have chosen based on what they think is most closely in line with the type of work you do. Problematic as of late, because it's been sitting anywhere between 0.5 to no more than a percent. So contractors that chose that option right now are faced with a dilemma of only being able to escalate their rates about 1%. So those are the three different ways. When you're looking to figure out how to escalate, you need to look back to your final proposal revision letter or FPR document that you signed with GSA. That's going to have the terms and conditions that you agreed to, and almost always specifically will name whatever choice you negotiated with GSA for your EPA. Obviously, GSA will let you lower your price at any time. They'd be happy to see that price adjustment. For those of you that chose a most favored customer approach and you can't go lower than your GSA pricing or lower than you disclosed, if you need to be able to gain some flexibility for a particular commercial contract or something outside of GSA, then you may need to go in and lower your price for GSA just to not be in violation of the economic price adjustment clause downward. For those of you that are selling product or are a manufacturer or a reseller, you need to keep your GSA schedule up to date. So you make a determination and a promise as a manufacturer that you will keep it up to date as of 30 days from the time that things change. So additions, deletions, part number changes, price changes, all have to be kept up to date. If GSA gets on there and figures out that you've got outdated pricing or outdated product, they can cancel your contract. So you just need to make sure that from a maintenance standpoint that you assign the appropriate amount of administrative responsibility to whoever's handling your contract to make sure that this gets done. There are a couple of things that come up pretty continually when talking about GSA schedules after you have been awarded. And one of them is BPAs and teaming, blanket purchase agreements and teaming. Blanket purchase agreements are a great way for ordering agencies to make repetitive purchases from a contractor. So you only need to go through the acquisition of a BPA once, and you can continue to do work to whatever level that's assigned to that actual contract. It's much like a PO for a commercial company. The thing about BPAs is, in and of themselves, they're not contracts, so they actually have to have a contractual backbone, and the GSA schedule works really well for that and allows for ordering agencies to go through that acquisition process only once. The other really important thing, especially for small businesses when talking about GSA schedules, is going to be teaming. There are two different ways to team using a GSA schedule. The first is just as you probably think of teaming. In this scenario, there's a reseller or prime contractor here up by that money bag who's getting issued the BPA. And then that business subcontracts out to these, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, however many teammates or subcontractors. The thing about this that doesn't work as well for small business is, in order to be selling everything on your GSA schedule contract, the prime has to have all the labor categories and all of the products on their GSA schedule, which for a small business often doesn't work well because you don't have the breadth that a large business might on that type of a schedule. But GSA allows for something called contractor teaming agreements, or CTAs, which is an option for businesses to come together and use all of their GSA schedules simultaneously. In this scenario, there is a lead contractor, but not a prime contractor. So someone's going to take the lead in terms of billing and will do just about everything that a prime contractor normally does, with the exception here that everyone is taking all of the different GSA schedules are referenced on the order, and all of these companies then report whatever portion of their sales are back to GSA for the industrial funding fee. In the first scenario, the prime was getting all of the revenue and having to pay the industrial funding fee. In this scenario, contractor number one, whatever portion of that buy got kicked back to them, they will report and pay their own industrial funding fee on the total order. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the e-tools. GSA Advantage, I just showed you a link for the Schedules e-Library, which is where you can do all your research. The backbone of the Schedules e-Library is GSA Advantage. You can reach that at gsaadvantage.gov, and it's where every contractor has to list their products and services, pricing, as well as all their contact information. Government uses it to do research, to look for different items, to look for services, to figure out what's going on with particular companies and what some possibilities are. They can also make direct orders on, it's actually a sales site, so they can make a direct order. If they're looking up the same product from three different companies, they can, on the spot, make that order through the GSA Advantage system. Contractors use it for research, much like I was discussing earlier, so that you can see what your competitors are doing. You know, is it worth it to even put on XYZ product given what the pricing from your competitors are on a same or similar product? So it's good to do that kind of research prior to even getting on the GSA schedule, but also before you think about starting to add or change different services as well. The other site that GSA uses is something called the eBuy system. As I just mentioned, from a product standpoint, GSA Advantage works really well. It allows for you to look at different options, different pricing, different competitors that are, you know, for a typical type of computer or something like that. From a services standpoint, the GSA Advantage system doesn't work very well. We went through the exercise where you sort of had to map out the labor categories based on your arbitrary decision of which category matches which category. So GSA has put together a system that they call the eBuy system. It was launched in June of 2002, and it is sort of the sister to GSA Advantage insofar as it's used for services. RFQs that we had also talked about are sent out by special item number. So as an ordering agency can log on to this system and list that RFQ directly to, they can either pick exactly who they want to send it to, they can have it sent to everyone that has that special item number, which can be dangerous if there's a couple thousand companies that have IT services, likely you're going to get inundated. Or you can choose any number or combination thereof. The interesting thing about GSA eBuy is that even if the RFQ was never sent to you as the contractor, you actually have the ability to log on and see every RFQ for any special item number that you have awarded on your contract. So even if it was only sent to three people, you actually can still view that and have the opportunity to bid should it be right up your alley. Obviously, I'm not a proponent of doing a lot of proposal work for opportunities that you know nothing about. So, you know, again, with a grain of salt, you want to think about what that opportunity was and how it's going to fit in for you. Do you know anything about the customer, the mission, the goals, the overall agency, in order to have the qualifications before you bid on something that you may have a 20-25% chance of winning if you don't have that relationship? You can respond to the RFQ directly on the eBuy system, and you're automatically registered for eBuy as soon as you get compliant with GSA Advantage, meaning you can't see anything once you're awarded. You can't see any of the eBuy functions until you get onto GSA Advantage and list your price list as GSA requires of you within 6 months of getting onto the GSA schedule when you first start. And they also require that you update that information, even if it means reposting because nothing changed. The system will ping you after 2 years if you haven't made any changes to your GSA Advantage listing. So you may just even have to go in and refresh it. For those of you that use the Schedules Input or SIP program, there's also EDI vendors that you can use to keep your prices up to date and your prices up to date on Advantage as well. Let's talk about small business eligibility for a second. The SBA and GSA used to have a memorandum of understanding that allowed for 8-8 purchases when using the GSA schedule. You can still get 8-8 credit. The ordering agency will still take 8A credit, but technically there can be no 8A set aside when using the GSA schedule because that memorandum of understanding expired. And the reason it expired is that GSA only makes you recertify your size every 5 years. At the time that you go back in for your first option period, GSA schedules are 5 years with 3 5-year follow-on options. So at the time that you're actually going back in, you recertify your slice standard. The SBA asked GSA if they would have their contractors do this annually as opposed to every 5 years. And GSA's response was that they didn't have the manpower contractually to require an extra modification out of every single company and every single contracting officer. So they said no. And the SBA said, okay, well, then we're not going to renew this memorandum of understanding, because what ends up happening is your size is elongated. So you could have been in the 8A program for 2 years prior to your graduation, gotten on GSA schedule. You're going to carry that 8A cert through all the way through those 5 years, even after you graduated. The same is true as a small business turns to a large business. If it happens organically because of your growth, you will continue to carry your small business size on the GSA schedule contract even after you graduated. You will find that there are ordering agencies that will ask you to recertify at the time of an RFQ. That's their prerogative, but if they don't do it, then you can continue to operate as a small business because that's how the contract was actually awarded. There are two, I'll end with two different kinds of purchasing, and then I'll open up for questions. One is cooperative purchasing. For those of you that aren't aware, cooperative purchasing is just a fancy word of state and local government purchase. GSA Schedule 70, which is IT, and the Schedule 84, which is the total solutions for law enforcement schedule, disaster recovery, all those sorts of things are held on Schedule 84. State and local governments have the ability, GSA actually lets them use the GSA schedule contract vehicle, in which case you are counting that towards your federal sales, as well as reporting the IFS, and making sure that your terms and conditions are correct for the GSA schedule in accordance with your contract. Not all of state and local governments like to use the schedule. Not all of state and local governments are even aware of it. It's not a mandatory issue, but there are some states, like the state of Ohio, use the IT schedule almost exclusively. And it's open to, you can see here, states, counties, municipalities, cities, towns. I mean, it literally could be used by almost anyone at a state or local level. Whether or not they have the savvy to understand that and to be able to use it is about how effective that program will be. There's some discussion around opening all of the GSA schedules for state and local purchase. At this point, they're leaving IT and 84 to be the only two as a test case. The only other way for state and local governments to purchase off of the GSA schedule are in times of disaster recovery. So there's a Recovery Purchasing Act, or a Recovery Purchasing part of the Defense Authorization Act of 2007 that allows state and local governments to use all of the GSA schedules, not just IT, not just Schedule 84, at a time of declared emergency. The floods that have been going on through the southeast are a good example of a time when some of these Service Master, ServPro, and other response teams got on the GSA schedule specifically for those types of purchase. In the end, it allows them for a really quick turnaround. There's limited authority on recovery purchase or recovery purchasing. It has to be disaster, and it has to be declared, actually. So those are the only two ways that, that state and local governments can purchase. But you will find, for instance, if you're in California, there's a CMAS, California Multiple Award Schedule, that uses the IT schedule as the backbone, or any schedule as the backbone. It saves them money in terms of not having to originally negotiate that main contract with you. They're trusting that GSA is doing their job, and then they're piggybacking off of the work that GSA is doing to negotiate what they believe are probably the best rates they're going to get from you. So those are the different kinds of purchasing. Those are the types of things that we talk about after you've gotten awarded. Michael, you can open up for questions if you want to release the lines, or if anyone wants to type in a question, I'm happy to answer whatever I can for you.
Great. Thank you, Courtney. So if you want to ask a question, you'll be able to unmute your line by pushing *6, and you can go ahead and ask your question that way. I'm just going to start off with one question here. When you're developing your pricing, can you build the industrial funding fee into that pricing as a, as a line item?
Hopefully you will have built it in. When you actually, it is allowable that you first take the discount off of whatever you claim you're going to give GSA as a discount, and then you can add back in your industrial funding fee. It's a good question. Not all companies are aware of it, and they end up eating it. Although it is one of the few negotiating tools that GSA loves to play with, and that, many times they will ask you to absorb the industrial funding fee. Just as a basis of negotiation or a tactic for them.
Thank you. And so if anybody else has any questions, you just push *6 on your line to open it up.
Yeah, I ran through quickly today.
Well, I know it was a lot of really good information. If nobody else has any questions about it, I'll just give another moment in case.
Sure, and all my contact information is in these slides, so if you have specific questions that you don't want to open up to everyone's line as well, you can feel free to send me an email, give me a buzz, and I'll answer whatever I can for people too.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to let everybody know that this will be available as a podcast and presentation, and if you missed the first one, 101, that's also available on the Give Me 5 site, and you can always find it on our website, or you can contact me if you have any more questions about that. So thank you very much, Courtney. It was a great presentation.
Thanks, Michael. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you for everybody on the line. This call will be posted through WIP's procurement page, giveme5.com. Please look to giveme5.com to register for upcoming training sessions. WIP and American Express Open are dedicated to opening federal procurement opportunities.
Oh, I have a question.
Donors. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. When you talk about your schedule and you've got your IFF and you're in the negotiation stage, let's say the GSA doesn't like the prices that you have, so you're negotiating with them.
Right.
Where do you go to compare yourself? So you get like bids, so you can see what other people are bidding for the same type of work.
Yeah, and see, that's the one thing. You're going to be able to see people's ceiling prices, but you're never going to know what people are actually bidding. And you have the ability to spot discount from your GSA schedule pricing when using that contract vehicle. So what you do know is their ceiling prices. What you're not going to know is what their actual bid price was. So that's, it's more of a matter of the same way you try to figure out commercially, sort of, who, you know, based on who's winning and what's going on. You'll know the total value of the contract in the end, but you may not know what their actual discounting structure and rates are.
Right. But is there a specific spot where I should go to find that?
The Schedules e-Library, which was on slide, let me go back up. I will show it to you. You can check it on GSA Advantage, number one, GSAAdvantage.gov, and you can look up any of your competitors' products or pricing. It's the easiest way to do that.
Okay.
It'll just give you an idea of what the ceiling prices are.
Right. GSAAdvantage.gov is the best spot then.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. So if anybody else has any more questions, remember, you can always contact Courtney through her contact information or contact us here at Women Impacting Public Policy. So just to wrap it up, Give Me Five is here to provide the best possible training on government contracting, and once again, we do appreciate feedback on these sessions. So please take a moment to fill out the short survey that will arrive in your inbox following this call, and that will also include the podcast recordings of this call as well. I also encourage you to visit American Express Open's guide for or site for government contracting. Open created this site as part of an educational program called Victory in Procurement, and I'll send a link to that as well. A lot of helpful resources that you can find that are also associated with the Give Me Five program. Women Impacting Public Policy is the voice for women in business in our nation's capital, advocating for and on behalf of women and minorities in business and the legislative processes of our nation, creating economic opportunities, and building bridges and alliances to other small business. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Michael. Everyone have a good day. Thanks for taking the time.